It is Friday, the 1st of February 2019. My name is Jeremy Medlin and welcome to episode 25 of the Stock Market Movers podcast. Just a quick reminder that nothing that I say today should be considered financial advice. And if you're looking for financial advice, I recommend that you speak to an authorised financial advisor. Thanks very much for listening in. Episode 25 and the third episode of 2019. I hope that you're all having a good year. I cannot believe that it's already February and it's almost too late for me to be asking if you do have a good year, but I hope you did anyway. So there was some company news again this week for the first time this year. So for those listeners that tuned in last year, I guess this is sort of a resumption of normal service. So this week I'm going to be talking about SkyCity. They're the casino company that came out with the interim results. I'll talk about Oceania, the retirement operator, and I'll also talk about the downgrade from Air New Zealand. Finally, I'll finish off with a discussion about a great business book that I read this year. But before I kick off, I'd like to thank everyone for listening into the podcast. I wasn't expecting it because it was January and I was expecting it to be quiet, but more people tuned into the podcast in January than any other month. And that was a shortened month as well. So more than three times as many people listened in January than in the whole of August 2018, the month that the podcast started. So the great thing is that the older episodes are still getting new listeners. I was sort of expecting the older episodes to die out in terms of listener growth, but that shows that new people are tuning in. So whether you're a new listener or an old one, I really do appreciate your support and the feedback that you've given me. And I'd encourage everyone to get in touch if they want to have a chat. It's great to hear from people that are listening. So with that in mind, we'll get stuck into the episode. So SkyCity, SkyCity Entertainment Group, that is, they trade under the ticker code SKC on the NZX and also SKC on the ASX as well. So they're a New Zealand company. Obviously, they have a market cap of around $2.5 billion, and they pay a dividend of about 5.3%. So SkyCity, essentially, they provide casinos. So if you come to Auckland and you want to go to a casino, you're going to be using SkyCity services. So essentially, I've discussed these guys in the past in the podcast. So they're a regulated monopoly, and that essentially means that they're allowed to exist by the government. And if you're in any doubt about this, go try and open a licensed casino somewhere and see how hard it is. The people that will be happiest about that are all the lawyers that will get significant fees from it. And obviously if the business wasn't regulated, then you'd have casinos popping up all over the place, and it would be a business that's significantly harder to make a profit from. So whenever I've seen presentations from SkyCity, a big part of what they do during those presentations is try to justify how responsible they are as providing gambling services. Like, they just seem to be banging on about how responsible they are to, you know, that they're not encouraging problem gambling and everything like that. And I don't know, I guess I can give my opinion about casinos in general. And, you know, obviously I've been to a casino and I enjoy them when I go. I'm no means a regular and no means a problem gambler. And no doubt, you know, a lot of what happens in casinos is just harmless fun in that sense. You know, it's people just going and spending money they can afford to lose, and it is harmless fun. But I don't know, I guess if you're owning shares in SkyCity, and there's nothing wrong with that, you have to be comfortable with the fact that you're making if the company makes profits and if they provide a return to you over the long term, which I expect a regulated monopoly like SkyCity would. Obviously, they're not going to set the world on fire, but I expect you to get some returns over the long term. You know, you have to expect that those returns are essentially generated because other people have lost their money in the expectation that they're going to make some money. So, you know, where you sit in the morality scale there is probably will dictate your feelings a long way to SkyCity. I'm not really sure how I feel about it as an investment, but, you know, those are the facts. It's sort of the cold facts that if their profits are from people, for the large part anyway, I know they do functions and the rest of it, but a large part of their, and restaurants and whatever, a large part of their profits have come from people that are making bets in the expectation, whether right or wrongly, that that they'll make money. So it is a tough one, and they always have this sort of to and fro between the government. You know, they get promised more machines if they add a convention centre and all that sort of stuff. So it sort of comes from there. So anyway, they came up with earning guidance for the first half of 2019, and they expect EBITDA for the first half to be $189 million. I don't like them talking about EBITDA because for some reason they seem to have huge capital expenditures and depreciation charges. So they expect net profit, anyway, probably more reliable in this case, to be $97 million for the first half, which is up 10% on the prior year. And they did say, and that's pretty strong growth from Sky City, really, when you think about it. I mean, how fast can a casino realistically grow? There's always that balance between growing and encouraging gambling and all that sort of thing that goes on. And, you know, can it grow too much faster than population growth? Maybe it can, but not realistically over the long term. And therefore, they've come out and said earnings growth in the second half will be strong. It's not going to be as strong as the first half because they had a strong finish of 2018 as well. So you'd almost say this last two reporting periods for them has been a normalization of activities and normalization of earnings. So going forward, I think you'd see a resumption to more that sort of regular and maybe steady sort of growth. It's not going to be the sort of growth that you'd expect to set the world on fire by any means, literally, because it's hard to for them. But you know, if you're buying them now as a regulated monopoly with a 5.3% dividend yield, I'd personally be wanting that dividend yield to be a bit higher. You'd have to be comfortable with the fact in terms of where that dividend's going to be coming from. It's coming from gambling profits, let's face it. You know, no need to sugarcoat it. So, and there's nothing wrong with investing there, but you have to be comfortable with that as an individual. And you know, you'd expect a little bit of growth in that dividend over time as their profits grow, but you know, and it would be a reasonable investment, but you wouldn't say it's going to set the world on fire. So yeah, interesting one from Sky City. A normalisation and growth from a regulated monopoly is how I'd sum it up. So Oceania Healthcare, they trade on the ticker code OCA on the NZX. I don't believe they have an Australian listing, but I'll have to check that. I don't think also that I've discussed them on the podcast to date either, so it's a new one to talk about. They actually reported their interim results this time last week, but because I was so focused on the MOA episode, I didn't get the chance to speak about it, but we're speaking about it now. So they have a market cap of about $630 million, and they have a healthy dividend yield of 4.5%. So they're a retirement village operator, you know, similar like Ryman and Somerset and the other ones. So they're the third largest in residential aged care in New Zealand and the sixth largest retirement village. So one stat from the interim report that I was quite taken by, and you know, this might be applicable across all the retirement villages, I'm not sure. So they have 3,600 residents and approximately 2,550 staff. And I was like, wow, that's quite a high staff to, well, at least it seems to be for me. I'm no health industry expert, so I could be wrong, but as an outsider, it seemed quite high, and I'm sure the other ones are the same, but it certainly was interesting to me anyway. So there are 46 sites in New Zealand, spread about relatively well across the whole of the country. So the retirement ones are always a different sort of one to value, because it's not so much focused on the cash flow of the business as much as the asset value. And so it's always sort of a tough one for me. And it's not so much what cash you're generating, although of course it will be in the long term. It's how you can retain those earnings and grow it into future villages and increase the, and you know, the reports from retirement villages are always the same. We've got so much growth potential ahead of us, and we've got this many sites for development. We developed this many beds this year. We've got this much in our pipeline, everything like that. So being property, the return on equity is usually relatively low, because obviously the asset values are generally so high, especially in this time of quite, well, depends on your view, quite, not inflamed, not the right word, but I guess at the quite high property values relative to where we've been historically, I guess is the correct answer. So the idea is that you grow your assets over time and then maintain your return on assets to deliver a return to the shareholders. And that's essentially what Oceania and other retirement villages are looking to do. So looking at the interim report, OCA has assets of about $1.2 billion and liabilities of $667 million, leaving an equity of about $540 million. And you know, the market cap of $634 million, you could say they trade relatively close to their, I guess, their tangible asset value. So they have a bit of leverage on their liabilities through borrowings, and I guess the ace in the hole is the refundable occupation rights. That's the other way they get the leverage. If they wanted to lever up their business more to get a higher return on equity, they could do so by taking more debt, but obviously that increases the risk of the business in case there's any downturn for whatever reason in the market. So a pretty solid result. So about $21 million in net profit through the quarter. For the half, which is about a 5% increase in the prior year. But really, it's more of the same from the retirement sector. And I guess that's one of the reasons why they've been such popular investment vehicles. Obviously, starting off with Ryman Healthcare in the early 2000s through to today, and then the rest of them, and why they make such a big part up of the NZX is because of the, I guess, the long term demographic trend, the popularity of the retirement villages, and I guess the predictable returns that have been delivered by these business models so far. Whether it can continue in the future, I don't know. I guess over time, as the asset bases get larger, it's going to become harder to generate the same returns on those assets. It's a law of large numbers thing that we spoke about in the past. The larger the businesses get, the harder it is basically, it's much easier to get a big return on $1 million than it is $500 million. You know, anyone knows that. So it's the same for these sorts of companies. It'd be interesting to see what happens when, and they'll tell you the opposite, all these companies, that when they run out of the easy growth opportunities ahead of them, if they sort of turn to some other sort of financial tricks like increased leverage and things like that, where those companies go from there, and maybe put some more pressure on cost savings and everything like that. So that'll be the interesting thing for me going forward. But yeah, I mean, these are obviously solid businesses, and obviously the property market has an impact as well, and that could happen on the asset side of the balance sheet. If we do get a decrease in property prices, then rather than that's when it will put pressure on the balance sheet as well. But at the moment, these companies are certainly humming away. So Air New Zealand updated the market during the week, and it was probably, I guess, the most significant update on the NZX during the week. Air New Zealand, for those that don't know, they trade on the NZX under the ticker code AIR, or Air, and they trade on the ASX under the ticker code AIZ. So they're about a $3 billion New Zealand company. They're not the largest company we have, but they're one of the most significant. And, you know, if you like stocks that Peter Lynch says you should be able to explain to a five-year-old with a crayon, Air New Zealand is definitely one of those. All you need to say is that they fly planes, and it's pretty simple to understand. So I say they're a significant company because when you look at their 2018 annual report, if you scroll down to the bottom of annual reports in New Zealand, or near the bottom of annual reports in New Zealand and Australia, you can see how many shareholders the company has. And in New Zealand, in 2018 annual report, said they had 25,685 shareholders. So that's a significant whack of the population, definitely the population that owns stocks in New Zealand. So chances are, if you're listening to this, well, not chances, there's a fair chance that you own some Air New Zealand stock. So like I was saying, they had an update to earnings outlook. So they downgraded their earnings outlook, essentially. So they said they expect an earnings before tax of between $340 and $400 million. And that was a downgrade from $425 to $525 million. So quite a decent size downgrade there. And the rest of the market thought so as well. And I think on the day, the stock traded down about 12%. It's interesting to note as well, when you look at that previous range, $425 to $525, it's quite a big range, $100 million. So they've left a range of 25%. And I think the reason for that is because there's so much unpredictability within the airline industry that they leave a bit of buffer there in terms of range. And the unpredictability this time came in terms of the Rolls-Royce engine issues. So if you don't know what that are, I didn't really know much about either, but I looked online and read some articles in the UK and things. So Rolls-Royce, they've had some issues with their jet engines. And I'm no pilot by any means, but just reading about some of the issues, it sounded like they had cracks and other problems with two of their jet engines, and it's going to cost them over £1 billion over the next few years. So like I said, I'm no pilot, but I'm guessing that having cracks in jet engines is not something that you're necessarily wanting. I think there's been some restrictions on Rolls-Royce engines on planes in the air as well. So that's obviously having an impact on Air New Zealand. And interestingly, looking across the market as well, on the day of this news, the Qantas stock, I think, fell 5% in Australia as well. So some correlation there. People obviously looking at Air New Zealand saying, okay, this is going to affect Qantas as well, and there's a sell-off. So they expect a $30 to $40 million impact from the Rolls-Royce issue. So they also pointed to, and I'm pretty much quoting here, slower growth, including leisure travel within domestic New Zealand and softening of inbound tourism traffic. So that's an interesting line for me. And in many ways, that is probably a reflection maybe of the wider economy and maybe of things, I guess, we've seen other signs of it as well, but maybe of things slowing down a bit in the economy. Certainly, you'd expect less domestic travel if the economy is slowing down, because one of the first things you cut when you're tightening up your purse at home is your domestic travel and your holidays and everything like that. That's one of the first things to go. That's the easiest thing to cut. And inbound tourism as well is maybe a reflection, and I'm guessing here, but maybe a reflection of some of the issues you're hearing out of a slowdown in China as well, although I'm not 100% sure on that. And they said at the bottom of the update that they're going to review their fleet, which my guess is the initial stages of perhaps some cost cutting. So it'll be interesting to see how that one plays out. And I guess that leaves you, if you're one of the 26,000 or nearly 26,000 shareholders of Air New Zealand, what to do with the stock. And I don't think really much should change. I mean, if you were buying Air New Zealand the day before this announcement, maybe you'd think this is a good opportunity to add some more to the stock at 12% cheaper, because essentially at the end of the day, the issues with the Rolls-Royce, it's not going to be a long-term problem. Of course, it sucks at the moment, but it's not going to be something that affects them for the next two decades. So if you were buying them a few days ago or a few weeks ago because you felt you were going to hold them for a long period of time, now is a good opportunity to add more. But if you weren't buying them for whatever reason, you know, it's probably not much has changed, because what really has changed in the long term, there's obviously some cyclical stuff there with the economy, but, you know, I don't see how this should change your view of Air New Zealand over the long term. If you're a buyer, maybe it's time to buy, you get some more for cheap, or if you're watching it, maybe this is a time to get in. But if you're neutral on it, it probably doesn't really shift the needle too much in my view, but we'll see how it plays out. And I think particularly interesting their note on a potential slowdown as well, which I'd like to extend to the rest of the economy, but we'll see how that one plays out. I'd like to talk about a book that I've read this year as well. It's been quite a really interesting and fascinating book for me, and it's got two things I look for in a book as well: quite an easy and entertaining read, and also very cheap on Amazon. I think you can buy it for about $5 on the Kindle or something like that. So ticks those boxes. It's called Zero to One by Peter Thiel. He's a billionaire founder of PayPal. And interestingly enough, he actually has New Zealand citizenship. I think he pretty much bought his way into citizenship, has a large land holding in Wanaka, and probably used some means that wouldn't be available to your everyday person that wanted to buy a citizenship, considering he's only been in the country a couple of times. But anyway, that's a different story. You can read about that on Wikipedia. So basically, this book, and he wrote it with a chap called Blake Masters. I think Blake Masters was someone that wrote a load of very detailed notes on a bunch of lectures Peter Thiel did at universities, and then got together with Peter Thiel and put together the notes in the sort of a book format and in a way that was quite easy to understand. And I found it really, really fascinating book. It was really, really interesting. And I guess just some of the highlights from it was some of the conversations about the way he valued tech companies. And I think he said something along the lines of, and I'm probably bastardizing this quote a bit, back in 2002, he predicted that the PayPal would make most of its money after the year 2012 as it developed into its markets. And some really interesting things about how he was able to grow the company and everything like that. And I think just some great thoughts and value in tech companies in general, probably some stuff I hadn't really thought about as well. And there were some great thoughts on technology, and he turned a lot of things on his head. I didn't necessarily agree with everything he said, but it clearly that he's an independent thinker and someone that is able to view things in his own way. And really interesting thoughts on globalization and the importance of further technological development as well. And the globalization thoughts were very interesting in terms of when you're discussing China and the way they've caught up through globalization. And I particularly liked his discussion early on in the book, and it was sort of a theme throughout the book as well, was about competition versus monopolies, and the way he used the term monopoly profits. I found that really fascinating, and it's obviously something that he was discussing in relation to the ideal business. And it was a very, very interesting book. For the price and the time it takes to read, I'd definitely recommend it. I'll post a link in the show notes on this episode and on the Facebook page as well. Right, that's about all I have time for today. Many thanks again for listening into the podcast. As a reminder, that nothing that I said today should be considered financial advice. One thing I am considering doing is ways to expand the podcast and get more sort of reach out there. And one of the ways I was looking to do that is maybe through doing a second podcast during the week that covers stocks on the ASX. I know lots of New Zealand investors also have an interest in the ASX just because it's so close to New Zealand and it's comparatively such a big market. So if you do have any feedback on that, I'd love to hear what you think. So you can do that by sending me an email at jeremy@stockmarketmovers.co.nz or finding me on Facebook and sending me a message. So you can find us also by searching Stock Market Movers on Facebook. I'd love it if you shared it with your friends and give us a like. And once again, my name is Jeremy Medlin, and this has been episode 25 of the Stock Market Movers podcast for Friday, the 1st of February 2019. I'll see you all again next week.